wishing all Radio Aryan listeners a happy Christmas and a diversity-free New Year.
You are listening to Radio Aryan.
Welcome to SS Britannia. Today's date is the 26th of December 2016. It's Boxing Day and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks. And of course, I'm joined by my co-host, Subal. Merry Christmas and happy Boxing Day to you, Subal.
Merry Christmas. And happy Boxing Day.
you don't sound like you've had a very good Christmas there. How's your Christmas been?
No, it's been all right. Yeah, it's been all right. Christmas is always a bit torturous because Christmas basically, I don't know what it's like in other people's families, but in my family, it's very much a case of eating lots of chocolate and drinking and watching mindless television. So it's a little bit difficult to get through the whole day. But no, it's been all right. Yeah, it's been okay. Good.
Well, that's good. That's good. I really haven't done much here. I've been working on... Working on producing a script for a new series on Radio Aryan, Aryan Esoterica, looking at Hitler, the Ultimate Avatar by Miguel Serrano, looking at some of the research that he did and adding to it. I'm hoping that's going to come out next week on Thursday. It'll be 5 episodes. I've been working on it since October. I'm quite pleased with how it's come out. I hope people, listeners, are going to enjoy it and hopefully find some new things out that they didn't know before. Have you been working on producing anything for your channel recently? I saw that you've got something out to do with Pepe in the information industry.
Oh God, yeah. Well, that's a big subject. Yeah, I did that. Particularly, that's my how can I say? That's my magnum opus, really. I think. That's my like master plan to finance white nationalism and destroy the information industry. The basic idea being that the Jews, they brainwash us with the mass media, but the entirety of the mass media is built on this idea that you can buy and sell ideas, that you can copyright ideas, be it music or video or film or anything. Artworks of art, pictures, etc., etc. So the idea is that the mass media is built on this foundation. And I personally believe this foundation is wrong because I don't believe that you should be able to copyright any ideas. And I think if you look into the past in Christian Europe, the Christian monks wouldn't copyright God. They wouldn't copyright their books. They'd just write their books and the knowledge would be free for everybody. And so I think what the Jews have, I haven't really looked into the history of it, but I think what the Jews have done is they've definitely benefited from this kind of mercantile attitude towards knowledge and ideas where you own ideas. It's become the foundation for this industry because they own everybody. They own Superman, they own Batman, they own all the movies, all the franchises, all the books, all the, radio shows and all the music and all these characters and these names. They own all these things and then they sell them to us over and over and over again. So the idea is you destroy copyright and that whole industry would collapse. And people have been fighting about this for a long time, especially in the software industry. They've been trying to push, open source software, but nobody's ever resolved the problem because nobody's ever found a way to properly finance, free open source content. So my big idea that I put forward in that essay was that personally, I believe that what you need is you need a list of donors. I think this is what people are missing. If you have a list of donors, say for example, I use the example of Morgoth's Review actually in the article. Say for take somebody popular like Morgoth's Review. Okay, probably one of the most popular white nationalist blogs in England. And let's say you had 200 people and they give him £10 a month, right? That's £2,000 a month, £24,000 a year. And then, you know, you've paid for him, and then he can just become a full-time, you know, white nationalist blogger. He can do his work full-time and give away his content for free. So I think what would inspire people to do that personally is if, like, you put a list of donors on his blog so that you have the pride of having your name on that list. And you have this brotherly relationship and this brotherly, connection with the person that you're donating to. And if you could make it work for one person, like Morgoth's review, then you can make it work for lots and lots and lots of different white nationalist bloggers. And you can make it work for musicians, and you can make it work for all kinds of different people. And then you could gradually start to chip away at that giant information industry that the Jews own and undermine it with free content until you've destroyed the whole system itself. It's quite a big, it's quite a big subject. You really have to watch the video because I really like go into it. Like, it's like an hour long video, but anyway, that's the basic idea.
Well, it's a good subject. You know, I think you've got a point there, because everything that we have comes from what went on before. You know, people that are copywriting their ideas there, but those ideas, they wouldn't have had them if they hadn't been educated in the first place in all the arts of civilization that went on before. You know, basically you build your ideas up from everything that went on before, and everything that society produces you use to come up with something. This is why they didn't have the idea of copyright before. It's like saying, oh, well, this is my bit. You know, I came up with this all by myself. Well, no, you didn't. You were taught at school. You know, it's like if you look around your room, you can see all sorts of things that you didn't actually produce yourself that were produced by other people, the people that produce the tools that are needed to come up with whatever it is that you're physically creating. Whatever it is that you're mentally creating is based on everything that went on before. It should be owned by the nation. I mean, you could say that it's the nation that came up with all these things, or it's the white race that came up with all these things. This is why I find it so offensive when you see blacks saying things like, oh, you've culturally appropriated something. Just them wearing clothes is culturally appropriated from us. You know, it is. But people just don't think of it. And when you think of those superheroes that you were talking about, it would be more accurate to call them Superman, Batman, or Spider-Man, because they're all reflective of the Jewish idea of being the underdog. And most of them are written by Jews as well. People don't realize that these Jews came up with these comic books with these superheroes. And I think maybe, you know, that's why they did call them man or mun at the end. It should be with a double N instead of with a single N.
Oh, right. Okay. I don't understand the, what's with the double N? What's the meaning of that?
It's a Jewish surname. Goldman.
Oh, okay. Right. Okay. Got it.
Goldman, okay. And Silverman.
Stein.
Steinberg.
Berg. Superberg. Something like that. Batberg. Yeah. Okay.
Well, Berg. Yeah. Berg means mountain. I mean, this is why they call themselves Silverberg and Goldberg. It's basically showing you the mentality of the Jew. That's all he thinks about. It's money.
Oh, right, mountain. Okay, iceberg. Okay, yeah, I get it now. All right, yeah.
Yeah, like, you know, mountain of gold or mountain of silver. I mean, you were talking about something similar to this just before we went on air, about the Monopoly game and how that, you know, that encourages the idea of totally devastating somebody else financially.
Yeah, well, I was going to tell the story. Basically, every Christmas I play Monopoly with my mum. And I beat her. See, it's just anyway. So I was just playing, and I just had this experience, right? I'm playing this game, and I felt really bad, you know, that I basically bankrupted this person. And I just recognized that ordinarily, when you play a game, like for example, if you play a game of chess, right, or even a game of tennis or whatever, that's more just like a competition game. You never feel bad about beating your opponent. right? At least I never do. I never feel bad about winning a game of chess. But for some reason, playing this financial game, right, Monopoly, I'm bankrupting my opponent, right? And I feel like a little bit sad, you know? She has to pay like £800 when she lands on my hotel or whatever. And, you know, she can't afford it. And she's flushed down the toilet. And it just struck me that, I don't think that business has to be a zero sum game. And I don't think good business doesn't mean bankrupting your opponent. It shouldn't mean bankrupting your opponent. And it kind of has come to mean that, I think, in the modern corporate world. They compete with each other, but it becomes an unhealthy competition where they want to absolutely and utterly destroy the opponent. And the Monopoly itself, this kind of opponent, is not a good way of making money. It's not good for the person that has the Monopoly, and it's not good for anybody else. I mean, if you look at the way I played the game, basically, it's kind of funny, but anyway, basically, because it's just two people playing, right? So first tactic is you go onto the Monopoly board and you got to spend as much money as possible to get as many different properties in the different groups as possible. So you prevent the other person from getting a full set, right? And then I did that and then managed to do a trade. So I had a full set. It was the yellow one in the corner. And then I had money saved up. So then I just put loads and loads of houses on it, right? And she lands at it 2-3 times and then she's finished. She's bankrupt. But if you look at that from a financial point of view, we didn't develop the board at all. You see, I just got that one little corner of the board developed, bankrupted my opponent. And then I had the complete domination of the board. So a Monopoly in itself, I mean, if you can carry the analogy through, I don't know how much the Monopoly board game, you know, compares to reality, but I think there is some comparison that can be made there. But Monopoly itself, you could say, does it, not only you crush the opponent, but you crush the whole economy as well. I don't think it's healthy.
Well, what they did, I think when they came out with human rights, the whole idea of human rights was that the individual had a right to make as much profit as he could from the other individuals in society. He broke society down into these separate individuals. And before that, we had guilds and we had a just price for things. We had a fair price. So if there was a shortage of something due to a catastrophe, like there was a shortage of bricks in order to repair things, bricks would go down in price because they were needed. Whereas now, if there's a catastrophe and there's a shortage of bricks, they'll put the price up on the bricks so that the individual can make the most money. And the individual is making that money and making that profit at the expense of the nation around him, at the expense of the community around him, which ties into, again, to this copyright idea where you're seeing things as if they're separate from everything else. And this whole idea can be traced back to human rights and the people that first put forward this idea. And of course, that goes back to the French Revolution and the Jews and the Freemasons. So this was a side effect of it, was in the economy, where they could just screw people for as much as they could possibly get. And of course, this has been put across as good. This is, you know, the right thing to do. You've got to make as much money as you possibly can. And the result of that was what happened during the Industrial Revolution, where you had massive difference between the poor and the rich. And the rich thought they were doing a really good thing because they were making as much profit as they possibly could. But the poor were being worked to death, basically, in these factories. And then they exported that around the world with the British Empire. And then that basically does the people out of a job entirely back at home in Britain, because you can get the cotton and the clothes made a lot cheaper in India. And of course, the end result from that is all of this free trade, which we have now with the EU and with the rest of the world, which means that Britain doesn't actually produce anything anymore apart from unemployed people. And we import lots of foreigners to do the jobs cheaper. And it can all be stemmed back to not having any respect for your ancestors and the society that you come from, because instead of realizing that everything you have has been given to you by somebody else, the whole and you want to hand that on to your offspring. Instead of that, it's looking at yourself as an individual, and what can I take from everything else, and what can I take from the next generation? And obviously that is not something that somebody is going to think of that lives in a homogenous community. They're not going to think, I should be taking everything that I can for myself. I'm separate to this community. You would naturally think, well, I'm very grateful for everything my ancestors have given me. I would like to pass everything on to the next descendants, and I'd like to improve upon it, which is how things were done. But as soon as you have an alien, hostile group among you, like the Jews, or just a group that are separate to your community, they are going to look at that community as, what can we take from this community for ourselves? They're not going to be interested in respect to the ancestors of that community. They're not going to be interested in improving things for the descendants of that community, because they're international. Once they've taken everything they possibly can from that community, they can just move on to another one, because it's not their community, because they exist separate to that. So this whole mentality that we have can be traced back to the Jews and allowing them into our countries. That's the way I see it anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not too sure about the historical origin of copyright. I did look into it a little bit. To be honest, I found the subject to be a little bit boring. But there's a lot of stuff on the Wikipedia, but it's a bit difficult to crack into. The first instance, they say that copyright law as we know it appeared in, I think they said Vienna, or I think it was Venice, in about 1450. So we're talking about Renaissance type, time. I'm assuming that before that, it just didn't exist. You had this intellectual elite that would just create ideas. Well, because everything would be about God, ultimately. The church would own all the ideas. The church would write all the books, et cetera, et cetera. And they would write books, and they would share their knowledge, and everybody would benefit from the knowledge. And then all of a sudden comes this very mercantile approach to knowledge, whereby a person grows up thinking, oh, I've got a great idea, I can sell that idea. And we've fallen into this trap whereby everybody, and I've done it myself, right? I remember when I was a young boy, I was like 10, 11, I used to tell my friends, oh yeah, when I grow up, I'll just write a book and I'll be rich. That was my idea, because, I had a hyperactive imagination. I was into science fiction and stuff. I thought, well, that's easy, I'll do that. Of course, it never happened, but but that was the idea. And I think everybody, a lot of people, like high IQ people who would normally be in the intellectual class, they realize they've got a fertile imagination, and that the immediate conclusion they have is not, I'm going to give this idea away to everybody. They have the idea of, I'm going to sell this idea, right? And nobody questions it. Nobody questions it, because everybody does it. It's all pervasive. Every writer, every musician, every software engineer, everybody you see on the TV, that they all sell their ideas. It's just, it's absolutely taken for granted. And if you don't agree with this system of copyright, you won't even be able to publish your book anyway. So nobody will ever hear you. But I think it's very, I think it's a very bad thing. And I do believe that ideas should be free. And, if you follow down this road of copyright, because this is what the Jews have really done, which is really so dangerous. They end up owning everything. Even, I think we talked about this in a previous podcast. I can't remember, but they even own our DNA now. I mean, I think they're banned from owning human DNA so far. I'm sure they'll get that law changed soon. But they literally own the DNA of all the different plants on the world, all the little animals and all the seeds. I mean, this is what Monsanto's done. They own the DNA of the planet itself. It's only one small step until they own human DNA. I mean, if you push it far enough, seeing that science is reductive by nature, and it reduces everything down to maths. If you can own a mathematical equation, you can own the essence of the universe itself. I mean, you can quite literally say, this wavelength is mine. I've copyrighted that. You know, this collection of molecules is mine. I've copyrighted that. This is a, you know, I could see it in the future. They'll, you know, if the Jews, you know, continue on their path, they'll basically like be breeding slaves, and they'll be saying, yes, I own this DNA of this slave. It belongs to me, this type of breed, you know, this kind of thing. Yeah, that's the ultimate conclusion of copyright. I do believe it to be really bad and really evil. And part of the inspiration for the essay I just wrote is just looking at the Indian system, where you have Varnashram Dharma. So you have the intellectual class at the top, and then below that you have the warrior class, and then below that you have the merchant class, and then below that you have the working class. And the intellectual class, see, all these different classes would be maintained in different ways. So the working class is just gets paid, right? The merchant class, they trade for money, they do business. The warrior class, they tax. Okay, so they basically tax the merchants because they're the only ones that's got any money. And the intellectual class, or the priestly class at the top, they beg for money. They receive charity from everybody, I guess mostly the warrior class and the merchant class. So they're maintained by charity. And they have the duty of speaking the truth. And so my belief is that we seem to have lost this in European civilization, this idea of giving charity to the intellectual class. Now all the intellectual class does is it makes money out of its ideas. It's sold into this mercantile system where you create an idea, you copyright it, and you sell it. And so they've brought into this Jewish-controlled media system. And if we want to really destroy this thing at the root, we need to start giving charity again. We need to start supporting the thinkers. And for white nationalists listening to this in England, we have to support these thinkers like Morgoth's Review, like Millennial Woes, like Sven Longshanks, these people that are doing the hard work and doing the thought, and they're putting their products out there for free, their ideas and their knowledge. They're giving it to the masses for free. And they need to be supported by charity. That's my belief.
Well, yeah, we should support the creative caste. And the monarchy would always do that, wouldn't they? You know, they would support the artists.
Yeah.
And the creative types. But I think that this does point to an extreme arrogance on the part of people to think that their ideas, they're all their own. I mean, where do ideas come from? I mean, they used to look at it in the past that these ideas came from God. This inspiration came from God. You know, and even if you don't think the ideas came from God, where did your existence come from? It came from God. And you're lucky enough to be in one of these higher castes with the ability to think in these ways. It's your duty to do that for your nation and for your community and to enhance the lives of those around you. It's not your duty to make as much as you can from those around you. This is, this is how far we've come from this perfect beginning. I think the caste system that you outlined that they had in India, I'm sure that was the same system that they had in Europe.
Yeah, you know, absolutely.
We had castes in Europe as well. This was the way that, things were looked at. We had these guilds of creators, and what was thought up by people was owned by that guild. It was their sort of intellectual property and everything that went in before them with the ancestors and the ones into the future. And this was the sort of idea that fascism brought back and that National Socialism brought back. Instead of having competing companies and trying to earn as much money as you could for that company, you had these guilds. This is what Benito Mussolini brought back. And this is what the leftists don't really understand. They think that the corporations of fascism are like these corporations today, which are just trying to make the most money that they possibly can. Whereas the corporations of fascism are trying to do the best in that realm of creativity for everyone. So they would get the best, the best metal workers together, all working together, with the intellectual property owned by that corporation, and all trying to do their best in their sphere of influence, basically, rather than keeping their discovery secret for their one corporation that was competing against the other corporations and putting this copyright on it. It was a combined effort to do what was best for the nation. And it obviously worked because National Socialism, National Socialist Germany was so far advanced over the rest of the world, where they got together the best people in each, what's the word, in each trade or each discipline, and they got them all working together instead of working against one another, or instead of being headhunted by these different companies that were all trying to make the most money. It's a totally different way of looking at things. One way sees yourself as completely an island separate to all the rest, that is just trying to make the most for that individual with no respect for or gratitude for where you actually come from. And the other way of looking at it as in part of an organic body, which is the nation, and trying to do what is best for that nation. And obviously you still got to have competition to try and improve things, but the competition would be between the nations, not between the individuals. It would be between, you know, one country and another, who could do the best. Not yeah. War, you know. Who could improve things the most?
Yeah, one thing which struck me about copy, because I actually had this idea for copyright. I used to call it the copyright revolution. I did call it in my essay, but I had the idea like 10 years ago when I was really into the truth movement, you know, and used to be into Alex Jones and all that kind of thing. And, you know, they're always going on about the evil one world government, the new world order, and et cetera, et cetera. And one thing which struck me about copyright is that it is essentially a globalist system, because, you know, if I write a book in England, what is to stop some guy in China or even in America, right, where they speak English, from printing my book? It's not going to be an English law that stops it. It's only going to be international law that stops it and protects that, you know, that intellectual property in another country. So it's, So the whole system of, intellectual property is globalist by its very nature. It is globalist. It's inescapably globalist, which is why I always thought it was kind of funny, you know. I was scratching my head trying to figure this out years ago, because you see, like, Alex Jones, you know, he's selling his book or his DVD or whatever. And I was thinking, well, you know, he's selling this book, but he's copyrighted it. But, you know, if I, you know, just rip this off the internet in England, the only thing that's going to get me in trouble for doing that is some, you know, is the United Nations or some kind of international body. So I always thought it was quite, you know, contradictory, you know.
Well, that's what they brought out these international bodies for. And this international law was so that the Jews could claim back their money from the defeated country in the war, because they would lend to both sides. Country would get defeated in a war. And in the past, that was it. You know, the country was defeated. But now the Jews are able to claim their money back through the international law. And once you add usury and the fraudulent creation of money to this, this means that whoever owns the money can buy the most intellectual property. So you end up with the Jews buying everything without actually having the inspiration to create for themselves. And yet they buy up all the intellectual property, which has ended up, as you say, with them copyrighting bits of DNA. Because the people that have identified that DNA, it's then been copyrighted, and the Jews have put up the money for it and say that they then own it. Never mind the fact that the ability to actually isolate DNA comes from all the advances made in biology ever since the discipline was first discovered, first actually thought about. You know, looking into living beings and trying to break them down into their smallest components. And you can go right the way back to the Greeks that were doing this, right the way forward until now. You can't say that anybody owns that, can you? It's all ideas built on top of ideas in a continuous chain going all the way back into the past. And it's always been the white race that did this. You know, it hasn't been, none of the other races have ever created anything of importance. It's always been white people. 99% of all the inventions on the earth have come from white people, and the other 1% is doubtful if they truly were originally invented by these other races. You know, I always have this about the Japanese, and people say, well, the Japanese have such a high IQ. Well, what have they invented? You know, what they do is they miniaturize things. They miniaturize the things that we have already created. but they don't actually have the inspiration to come up with something for themselves. It all comes from us. And our ideas we owe to our ancestors, and we owe it to our descendants to improve upon them. You know, the idea of taking them and saying, well, that's mine, I find incredibly arrogant. Incredibly arrogant.
Yeah, I mean, I do believe that if you got rid of patent law, then there'd be a massive explosion in technology. And it has to be said that the whole patent thing is basically a way for, I mean, specifically for energy companies to keep down all these, you know, free energy technologies like water cars and things like that. You only have to take a short little browse through the internet before you discover different people building cars that run on water and magnet technology and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. All of this stuff gets suppressed because, you know, some smart inventor has an idea for a product and then he sells it to some big corporation and then he's just got to keep his mouth shut for the rest of his life and takes a payoff and either takes the money or he gets a bullet in the head. I would like to actually interject while we're on this subject, because you just brought something up in my mind, which I feel I should share with the white nationalist community that's listening to this. I do have a friend in Canada, and she's quite a good friend, and she's looking after this old lady who's a bit of a hippie, and she got cancer, and she got cancer of the ovaries, which is one of the worst cancers that a woman can have, and I think it is the worst actually. And the doctors gave her like a year to live, and she had one round of chemotherapy, and she didn't like it because it just makes you sick and it's horrible. I mean, chemotherapy is just basically pumping your body full of poison and hoping that the cancer cells die faster than you do. I mean, it's just really awful stuff. And so she started rooting around trying to find an alternative medicine, and she came across a guy. Now, unfortunately, I can't quite remember the name of this technology off the top of my head, but basically it's a machine. It's a magnetic machine and you get plugged into it and they pump these radio waves through you. It's invented by a German guy like 40 years ago. And so she plugs into this machine for 2 hours a day, and she's been doing it for the last 3-4 months now, I think. And she's almost cured, just like that. Boom. And unfortunately, I can't remember the name of the machine. If anybody is interested in this, if they do know somebody that's dying of cancer or they have a problem themselves, you can go on the YouTube and you can look at Noel Edmonds, who everybody in Britain obviously knows. And he also cured himself of pancreatic cancer using what seems like a similar technology. It was a machine. He plugged himself in. He pumped the radio waves or the electronic waves through your body at different frequencies. You can, the machine that my friend is using, you have different frequencies for different types of disease. They basically figured out the wavelength of different types of disease. It's really, like, really interesting stuff. And anyway, Noel Edmonds cured himself using one of these similar machines. It's very interesting because he goes on, he cured himself, and he got into some kind of Twitter fight with somebody, right? He was trying to tell somebody about this machine, and somebody was like, oh, that's just a load of rubbish. And then Noel Edmonds in reply said, oh, you're just a bit negative. You know, maybe that's why you can't cure yourself, because you're a bit negative, right? And then the guy's like, oh, you say I've got cancer because I'm negative. And he got really upset. So they dragged him on the BBC, right? And he's getting a hit job done in him by that guy. What was that guy? It used to be, children's BBC. Oh, Philip Schofield and some, you know, blonde girl. I don't know. And they're doing a hit job on him. And they're like, well, why were you mean to this person who's got cancer? And Noel Edmonds is sitting there and he's like, yeah, look, guys, I've cured myself of cancer using this machine. And they just don't care. They're not interested at all.
That's the important thing, isn't it?
They're just like, you hurt someone's feelings. You know, and he's just sitting there like, don't you care about the fact that I just cured myself of cancer? Oh, no, well, I hurt someone's feelings. You know, well, so, yeah. But anyway, I thought I'd throw that out there. I personally have a friend who has cured herself. It's been about 4 months. She's almost cured of ovary cancer, one of the worst cancers there, using one of these machines. So it's just one example of, I'm sure there are many, many different types of technology that are just being hidden from the masses because people invent these things, they create the patent, and then the patent gets bought by a big corporation and then shoved in a room somewhere and forgotten about.
Well, this is one of the good things about electronic music. If you remember when electronic dance music first came out, the big explosion of music and an explosion of sounds, it was all being resampled by other people. Mm. You know, the music that they were producing was able to be reused and recycled and turned into something completely different. Once the music was freed from being limited by copyright, of course it was still copyrighted, these record companies still wanted to try and make their money from it, but they were unable to because people were able to take these samples from that at home in their bedrooms on their computers and write totally new music from it, recycling everything that had gone before. And coming up with totally new tunes and new sounds that were all based on things that have gone on before. So I think that that shows you what can be done when you have a free access to knowledge instead of keeping it from the masses. And that medical device that you're talking about there, I mean, that's obviously not based on the technology that the traditional medical establishment news. That's obviously based on something different, where people are actually given that information out.
Well, the story about this particular device is that it's not illegal. It's created by, I mean, I'm gonna have to find it. Maybe you can put a note in the link. I'll have to find it and tell you what the specific name of the machine is. It's not illegal. It is legal. The problem that the guy has is this doctor is that people sue him. You see, he's very open to being sued by people. And, so he has to be kept hush hush. And the friend, the old lady that my friend is curing, she's a bit of a hippie. So hippies, you know, they have like a distrust in the agenda, in the, establishment. Anyway, they're kind of anti-establishment. So she keeps her mouth shut, and it's kind of like a secret, which is kept in like the hippie or alternative community. And this doctor, he doesn't see everybody. He only sees certain people, but he's apparently cured like 100 or 150 different people from cancer using this machine. He can't advertise. It's just kind of like a little in-group thing, which is kept very hush hush.
One thing that, about cancer and cures for cancer. I mean, I always heard that, cannabis would cure cancer, and people talk about cannabis oil would cure cancer. And then recently I heard that Howard Marks died of cancer. And yet if anybody was going to cure himself of cancer, it'd be him, wouldn't it?
Yeah, you know, I don't know.
The most famous cannabis smuggler of all time, cannabis seeds named after him and plants named after him. And then he dies of cancer. So I'm a little bit suspicious of the claims that cannabis cures cancer now.
Well, I did have a friend. Well, he's not a friend. Anyway, some guy from acquaintance from my hometown, and he was a bit of an old hippie, and he told me he stopped smoking marijuana because he said the new stuff is no good. Because in England now everybody smokes skunk, don't they? And he says it's just like awful, just like you smoke it and it just knocks you out, kind of stuff, you know. And he says the old stuff that they used to smoke. I mean, I don't smoke marijuana anymore. I did when I was like 18. Well, for a couple of years anyway. People used to smoke squidgy black and things like it was like a resin or, but anyway, it was different. The stuff that people smoke nowadays is all totally genetically modified, and it's just basically designed to just knock you out and it's not happy anymore. And this guy that I was talking to used to be a real pothead. He said he gave it up recently because, he didn't like the new stuff. He doesn't like the skunk. There you go.
Well, that's good that he gave it up. I think it dulls people's minds.
It keeps
them living in a dream world, and they don't take the opportunities that are given to them because they'd rather be sat at home smoking and listening to music or playing computer games or watching videos or whatever. I think it keeps people tranquilized that are using it, and they miss out on things, and their intellect is not as sharp as it should be. And, you know, I'm in two minds whether it should be legalized or not. I think the problem with legalizing it is that it's been promoted so much, and young people would do it and then tend to end up doing it for the for the rest of their lives, and they'd miss out on so many opportunities where they'd be sitting around getting stoned instead of taking up the opportunity. Whereas if it hadn't have been made illegal in the first place, and it hadn't been promoted so much with the 60s and with musicians and by making it appeal to people just by making it illegal, if that hadn't happened in the first place, then I don't think there would have been a problem, and it would have been used for its medical uses, because it's also useful for making paper and making clothes, and it's got all these non-medical uses that we can't actually use it for now, because it has this psychoactive ingredient in it. So I'm very much in two minds of whether it should be legalized or not. I don't like to think of people being imprisoned for growing a plant, and I think all the plants were given to us, you know, for a reason. They're all good. They're all have their medical uses, but it tends to get abused, I think. If any of our listeners do smoke it, I would advise them to give it up, because it will improve their lives. I used to smoke it. My life was much improved once I gave it up. Incredible improvement. Maybe a bit hard at first. You know, you may miss it a bit, but after a while, it's a huge improvement. My intellect was so much sharper. I'd forgotten just how much it had tranquilized me and made me docile. I think that's another part of it. People don't realize what's going on around us, because they're in a fuzz all the time, like a smoky haze. They're in a daze. They don't notice the way that we're being dumbed down. They don't notice just how damaging feminism is, how damaging the homosexual agenda is, how, you know, just what diversity is doing to us. You know, it passes people by, because all they're interested in is scoring a bit of dope and, you know, and being taken away from this society. Again, it points to something being seriously wrong with society if people just want to leave it all the time. They're looking for a recreational drug so that they can escape from the pressure of society. You know, if you think of what it's like living in a city, or that pressure of living in the city, so people just try to relax by taking drugs to get away from it. And that's not the way cities should be. I mean, if you look at the past, the cities were the good places, and the rural areas were the bad places. You know, it was the fields where you were likely to get mugged, and you would meet the dangerous people. In the cities is where you would meet the civilized people. You would meet the people that lived according to the law. Outside of the cities, that's where the outlaws lived, and the barbarians. And we've managed to turn that round into a completely opposite now. The cities are the most dangerous places to be. And you've got people living one on top of the other that don't know who their neighbours are. Yeah, especially in London. I don't know how much you've seen of London, Subar. You go there, everyone just seems to be frowning.
I've seen too much of London, thank you.
They're all frowning, aren't they? None of them are happy. None of them will make eye contact. No. You know, they wouldn't say good morning to you.
Well, they're all brown.
Yeah, that as well. I mean, but the white ones themselves, you know, they're not friendly.
Yeah.
I think half the brown ones used to be white. There's so much miscegenation that goes on there. You know, this is something that I've noticed over Christmas.
Yeah,
so much
awful.
Promotion.
Yeah.
So much promotion of it on the television. So much promotion of it. I saw a soap opera the other day, and you've got a white couple there with a brown baby. Mm. He just looks like, you know, like they're babysitting, and that's supposed to be his son. And it just looks so out of place.
My wife's son.
Yeah. My wife's son is a nigger. You know, that it really is ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, just to answer, like, on the issue of marijuana, I actually made a video about it once, but my opinion on that is that I think there's a difference between something that's morally wrong and something that's legally wrong. Like, for example, alcohol. Like, it's morally wrong to become an alcoholic, right? Because you're just wasting your life. But it doesn't necessarily should be legally wrong to become an alcoholic, because certain people have certain liberties, you know. I don't think – I personally think marijuana – should be legalized. I'm not really, I don't know. I guess I'm a little bit libertarian. I haven't really washed all of it away, I think. But, I think, yeah, because I don't really see any problem with it. Like, if you have a few beers at the weekend, you know, or you have a spliff at the weekend, it's not such a big deal. The problem with marijuana is if you smoke it all week long, and unfortunately, potheads generally tend to like fit into that category. They kind of sink into it for some reason. Maybe it is because it is illegal that they and the people that smoke it are generally kind of working class or criminal class, or they're in touch with the criminal class, and so that mentality comes across with it. I'm not sure what it is, but personally, yeah, I think it should be legalized. A lot of white nationalists do say that they point out that people like George Soros are trying to get it legalized, and so they think that you know, the Jews want to legalize all the drugs in order to, you know, just comatose us. But personally, I think if they really wanted it legalized, they probably would have done it by now. I mean, with the kind of parliament that we have these days, I don't really see what's stopping them. Personally, I think they use that issue. I think they want it to be illegal but decriminalized in order to undermine the law and create a certain criminal class. And in order to create this idea that it's okay to break the law, you know, this kind of hazy kind of gray area. And I think they want to do it for that reason. And they also want to do it in order to keep it as an issue to bring that left wing hippie, to bring hippies into left wing politics, basically. Because every hippie's like, want to legalize it, man, come on. And it kind of like drags them into the whole socialist agenda. So yeah, that's my opinion on marijuana. I think they should just legalize it, boom, get it done with.
I think it becomes a lifestyle thing. That's the difference with alcohol. If you drink alcohol, you become an alcoholic, and it's, you know, that's not a good lifestyle to have. But
no,
you know, with the smoking of dope, there's a lifestyle that goes with it, and there's a very easy character that, you know, that people can become. They can become known for cannabis. You know, people that are slightly deficient in their character can adopt the cannabis smoker, and then they can have the cannabis smoker character, and that's what they can be known for. I think that's part of it. And I've often thought the same way myself with the legal side of it, thinking that it makes a mockery of the law to make a plant illegal and prosecute people for that. You know, the next thing you think is, well what other laws are ridiculous and are a mockery of the law? And of course, all the speech crime laws are. But before they, you know, you really find out about these speech crime laws, you think, well, what else is there? Smoking cannabis is so bad that you can get years in prison, you know, what other laws are they? And this is why, you know, we should have just stuck with the laws that we had. You know, we had laws. We had these biblical laws that said, don't add to these, don't take away from them. And we had our common law, our natural law, which was basically exactly the same as the biblical laws. I mean, Alfred the Great collected all the previous laws from before and the ones that he had, and compared them with the biblical ones, and they were all the same as the ones in the Bible. And that was our common law, and that's what it was based upon. And then, of course, they start trying to change things, and they start bringing in these statutes and saying, well, the government can make law, the government can change law. And, you know, the law should really be like the cosmic laws, you know, like the law of gravity. If you drop something, it's going to fall. You know, if you stop breathing, you're going to die. You know, those are laws. And the law, as in, if you steal or harm your community, you're going to be causing harm to individual and the community. And you're going to be causing harm to yourself by harming the community. And these are all laws as well. You know, they're all things that are going to happen. If you harm other individuals in your community, you are harming yourself. If you lie, you're not only cheating the people around you, but more importantly, you are cheating yourself, because you haven't actually done what it is that you are lying about, or you have done what it is that you're lying about. You know, this is something that the blacks just don't understand. They don't understand that truth has a value in itself and of itself. You know, they're quite happy to lie. If they think that lying is going to gain some immediate benefit for them, then they will lie. Whereas a white man knows that knows that it's wrong to not tell the truth, because everything is based on the truth. The natural world is based on the truth. You know, reality is the truth. You know, lying is going against that. And the law itself should be based on reality, based on these truths that we see around us. You know, that's your punishment, cause and effect. You know, if you break the law, there is a punishment beyond, you know, getting caught by the police. There's an effect on the community which will cause punishment to everyone in the community, including you alone who has committed that crime. So those laws are there to prevent that from happening.
Yeah, I think also that there's like I was saying, the difference between morally wrong, but I can't even speak, morally wrong and legally wrong. There's I think there's two ways you can control the masses. One way is to just make everything illegal, which is what our government's doing now. And the other way is to just use a system of morality and, you know, make something disgusting, have a system of social pressure so that people don't want to do something wrong. So, for example, in India, marijuana is legal, but people don't smoke it. Not the general mass of people don't smoke marijuana because it's just frowned upon. It's like if you get into smoking marijuana, you're just like a low class bum. So people don't do it. So even though it's legal, the general mass of people doesn't do it. That there is always going to be a certain section of society that is slightly degenerate and interested in vice and so on and so forth. And they may even sometimes dress up their interest in vice in kind of like quasi-religious ways. You know, like there's the Rastafaris. They smoke marijuana and it's part of their religion. In India, you have the Shaivites. They worship Shiva and they kind of mix up drugs and marijuana with that. So you're always going to have that certain element in society. But basically with a system of social pressure, even though it's illegal, the vast majority of people don't smoke weed. So I personally just think that is the best way to run society. You have a moral framework and everything fits into place. And that's how this country used to run itself, really. You had a Christian moral framework. And people used to, you didn't have to have so many laws, you know, checking, do this, do that, It's people knew what was right and wrong, and they would do what's right. And then when that moral framework breaks down, society breaks down, and then the government starts trying to make law upon law upon law upon law to enforce people's behavior, and it never works out. And I've kind of seen this thing. You can also see, because I've lived in quite a few ashrams in my time, you know, and you know, like when you live in an ashram, an ashram is, you know, like a monastery, like you've got a group of people. Yeah. And when you live in one which is dysfunctional, you see that people start sticking signs everywhere. I've noticed this.
Telling people to do things that should be obvious.
Yeah, like don't put your shoes there or like wash your plate or, you know, this kind of thing. And they have to put these, they end up putting these signs everywhere because the ashram is dysfunctional. And, otherwise you wouldn't need the signs, you know? I think basically what you want is a moral framework. And if you have that strong moral framework, then you can be slightly libertarian. And our country used to be libertarian. People used to be able to do pretty much whatever they wanted to do. They'd get left alone, but you had that Christian, glow in the background, which kept everything running smoothly. And now that that's started to die out, the government's just shoving health and safety laws and just law upon law upon law upon
thousands
bureaucracy.
Thousands of them, isn't it? Every year.
And but still everything fails because the moral framework's gone. So
you need to do an absolute moral framework that comes from the deity that cannot be questioned. If they used to want to change a law, the king would have to send someone around to every every town in the realm, every city in the realm, ringing his bell and announcing that there was this new law that was going to be coming in. So everybody knew. So there was no chance that anybody could break the law because there was a new one being brought in. Can you imagine if they did that now? You know, tens, hundreds, thousands of new statutes and regulations that come in every year. And it used to, you know, and it was just rare that there would be a law change because, as you say, you know, the laws are absolute, morals are absolute, and you could rely on people to always do the right thing. And then you get an outsider group that comes in and they've got no incentive to keep to the moral framework because it's not their community. They're just here to take what they can from the community, which is the Jews, which is their whole mindset, is what can we take from the Gentile community? And to make it easier for them to do this, they bring in other hostile groups, other alien groups, and advocate for them to come in. And then you have to make law upon law to control the behavior of these other groups. It's, you know, this is why we have so much CCTV. Is because you cannot rely on people to do the right thing anymore because they're taught that God isn't watching every moment of their lives. But, you know, every child knows and believes in God. But what they're now taught is that that's, you know, to ignore that and that that's not real. Whereas before that was encouraged. A belief in God was encouraged. And then a child would grow up thinking that he was being watched every minute of his life by God. So he wouldn't break the law. Because he knew if he broke the law, he would be punished. So he would stick to his conscience and try to be, you know, the best person that he could be. And once you take that out, once people don't think they're being watched by God anymore, you know, you have to compensate for it. So the government puts closed circuit television absolutely everywhere, and it doesn't stop any crimes. Doesn't prevent any crimes whatsoever. And then they have to put in statute after statute to try and regulate people's behaviour. Now with this diversity and multiculturalism, it will eventually use up every resource we have in trying to fit these two pieces together that don't fit, you know, every resource we have, it's got to, because they will use up every law they can to try and do this, everything that they possibly can they will throw at it, because it's not something that's possible. You can't make black white. That's what they're trying to do, really, isn't it? Trying to change somehow by altering our behaviour and by altering their behaviour. And of course, both are constantly pushing for their own culture and for their own behaviour. So you'll never succeed.
It's like the left wing are quite racist, but they're kind of... It's a hidden racism because they bring all these black people over here and they expect them to act like white people. But they never do, unfortunately.
Well, and supremacism, isn't it? It's supremacism as well. It's saying our way is the best way. Why wouldn't you want democracy? Yeah. No, you must want democracy.
They will want democracy.
Though. We're going to bomb you until you accept democracy.
Yeah.
Force our way onto everyone else. Well,
we're done now, are we?
Well, I was just going to say, you know, we're sort of getting up near the end of the podcast now. I think we've covered quite a lot. Drugs and copyright.
Old ramble.
Yeah, and Monopoly. I think it's been a good Christmas ramble. I think our listeners will enjoy it.
Yeah, it was good.
I'm sure they will. And are we going to be back next Monday for another one, Subal?
Monday, Sunday, isn't it?
Yeah, but it will go out on Monday.
Oh, right, yeah.
Next Monday.
Right, yeah. See what you mean.
Next Monday.
Okay, yeah, I'm up for that. Yeah, good.
Okay.
I will try to read the Sunday papers so we can talk about, what's happening in the news.
We don't have to do current events. I think it's quite nice just to have an interesting conversation and talk about subjects that I think the listeners will be interested in. It doesn't always have to be relevant to current news.
You know, if we do current news, we'll probably start talking about that and then just, you know, go off into outer space.
Like we normally do.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much for coming on once again, Subal. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. And we'll see you all again next Monday.
Aryan for an alternative to the anti-white system on RadioAryan.com.